Welcome to Garden Fork Radio. We're here with Rick and Eric. Welcome, sir.
Good morning, Eric. How are you, my friend?
I'm great. Now that we spent a half an hour trying to reboot our computers.
It's a strange day today on the internet. It keeps dropping in and out. We're trying to decide if your side, my side, somewhere in between. You never know, but happy August 1st.
Oh, wow. I was just getting through July.
I know. We've had some wonderful weather here. We had a front push through. Yeah, it'd been 104, 105 for several days in a row. And we had a big front push through, and it's down about 68 or so in the evenings. And it doesn't warm up until 80 until around noon or so. So it's been wonderful to be outside for the last few days. And when you gave me the high sign, I was sitting on the back porch drinking coffee. So I have come in, sacrificed my morning under the umbrella to come in and chat with you.
Yay. Well, thank you. Hey, if this is your first time here, Garden Fork is a casual conversation about do-it-yourself, maker projects, cooking and gardening, home improvement. And today we have a lot of gardening and then a wind turbine that you make by yanking an alternator out of an old GM car.
Wow. Okay. You know, we get mail, and we love getting mail from people. So be sure and write us at, what is it?
It's radio@gardenfork.tv.
There you go. And just to say hi, or if you have a question, a lot of the mail load probably has switched now to the Facebook Garden Fork question and answer page group. But it's always great to get one. We got one from David of Weatherford, Texas.
We email back and forth quite a bit, actually.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he's a good guy.
Yeah, well, I like him. He likes me, so he gave me a compliment, so I'm thrilled. I don't read very well, but I'll summarize.
You want me to read it?
Well, go right ahead.
All right. Eric, just watched the Success in Knots video. You asked for it, so here are my tales of success. I like that. Do you remember last fall, Rick was telling about the University of Florida Agriculture Department was giving away tomato seeds with a small donation to the Ag Department? Well, I ordered two varieties, one indeterminate, which means it's rangy, and one determinate, which means very bushy tomatoes. I think they only had the two. I started the seeds in January in my greenhouse, all germinated. So I had about 30 plants. In mid-March, I planted 25 in a 4-foot by 30-foot raised bed. I gave away 5 to the neighbor. On April 14th, I had my first green tomato appeared. Between mid-May and June, we picked 20 to 30 pounds of tomatoes nearly every day. Huge
wow.
Tomatoes, 2-plus pound tomatoes from one set, and 8 to 12-ounce tomatoes from the other. I have never had such a successful crop. We gave away sacks of tomatoes. I'm a big hit at my doctor's and dentist's offices. Definitely a success. We have canned gallons of tomatoes, sauces, and other tomato recipes. When the heat hit the 1st of July, all of the blooming stopped. I'm going to trim back the wild vines, those are the indeterminate ones, and put them back in check and see when the fall weather comes if they will bloom again. Rick was spot on. Yeah, Rick was spot on with his recommendation. They were great plants, and that's from David, who lives in Weatherford, Texas.
Oh, thank you, David, and I appreciate the good words. But it all goes to you and your skill and the wonderful plants we get from, or the seeds we get from the University of Florida. It's called Klee, K-L-E-E, Lab, Klee Labs. They are breeding a better-tasting, fungus-resistant tomato. And mine, I'm about 30 days behind David, and mine are just coming in. I have 15 plants, and they're just coming in, and they are the tomatoes are huge. They're healthy. Nothing is eating on them. And I think I'm going to mirror David's success, maybe at a slightly smaller scale since he has about twice as many plants as I do. But I am just so amazed. And if you want some of these seeds, for a small donation to the Klee Laboratory at the University of Florida, and you can look it up on the internet, they will send you a package of seeds that you can put in your refrigerator this winter and let them stay over the winter, get them out in the spring and plant them and germinate them. And some of the best tasting, best growing tomatoes I've ever had. But thank you, David from Weatherford.
Now, do you have to give some feedback back to the University of Florida? Are they asking for that kind of thing?
You bet. They want to know how they're doing in different parts of the country. And so you don't have to give it, but they really encourage you to let them know. But frankly, if it will grow in Florida, probably it'll grow almost anywhere, because I've never seen the blights and the kind of things that they have down there, even up here. So it's a pretty rough place to grow tomatoes.
That's some citizen science going on there.
It is. It is. I'm always glad to see citizens doing interesting things.
I love that. And we've had a hand in that, you know?
We have. We have. Several people comment on the Garden Fork group on Facebook that they're using these tomatoes and getting really good success out of them.
If you want to come to the Garden Fork group, you just type in Garden Fork Discussion Group on Facebook. And it's a closed group. We have to approve to let you in because we have problems with spammers. And it's just a bunch of fun people. There's a woman named Wanda up there who been posting a lot of interesting stuff lately. And just kind of names pop up. But you can, if you have some pictures you want to share or ask a question, right there. And David, who is a patron, is on there or not. I don't know if everyone wants me to use their last name, so I'm not.
Right.
Oh, by the way, we have a new Patreon supporter, Nicholas H. I'll just say that. He knows who he is, and I will be sending him a little thank you. And Rick is a patron as well, right?
You bet. I'm paying to talk on the radio.
information about supporting Garden Fork. It's kind of like NPR, PBS. It's a monthly donation. I asked for $3 a month, which is like a magazine subscription. And that's at patreon.com/gardenfork, or the links will be in the notes of the show here. So thank you to Nicholas. And by the way, another Garden Fork Patreon patron, Scott, who is our Canadian agronomist, will be on the show soon. And he's been doing some interesting thing. He posts a lot of stuff on Twitter about, he just takes these, I think they have a drone now. So there's these giant fields that he grows of interesting stuff. It's pretty cool to watch.
Oh, wow. You know, I've thought about getting a drone. I've put it off so far, but I've got the bug.
Yeah, there's the yin and yang. I love the cinematography abilities of it, but I just I think there's a potential for doing stupid things or bugging your neighbors. So
we'll see. But out there at the country house, you should on your country estate. You should not be bothering the neighbors too much.
You know, but a lot of people think I have this large farm, and it's 2 acres and a little house. So
a little house that before you bought it had been donated to the fire department to burn down so they could practice. Yeah. So there have been many fix-up projects in that little house.
Well, speaking of fix-up, totally off tangent here, but our apartment in Brooklyn here, the building was all formerly very inexpensive rentals, and so I am redoing a lot of the electric. I had all the electric panels redone by licensed electricians. They did a fantastic job, but I'm doing some of the outlet wiring, and a lot of it is what the brand name is called Wire Mold. It's a surface mount conduit that doesn't look like an ugly round pipe. It just has kind of a rectangular, and you can paint it the same color your wall, and it hugs along the baseboard molding. But I'm having to rebuild that because the landlord that put in this surface mount wire mold did it really badly wrong. And it's not cheap. It's kind of expensive. But if you want to put an outlet on a wall that might be a cement block wall or a wall that you can't run electric to within the wall somehow, you can start with an outlet that's already wired. And if it is rated for the load, you can bring the surface mount conduit called wire mold off of that. You connect into that and you can run it along the wall to somewhere else. Like if you want to put an outlet near a window for a window air conditioner or something.
Right. So, well, now you said that the previous owner had kind of messed it up. How do you mess something like that up?
You have to have a continuous ground. The conduit functions as a continuous ground. and that was not happening. And they used mismatched parts. There's two different kinds of wire mold. There's a older kind that's flat and thin, and then there's this, the newer kind is kind of more built up. And then they kind of caulked it together around the corners, and it's just horrible. And they put 14 gauge wire in it, and I want 12 gauge wire in it.
Right. So. Yeah. There's no reason not to go with 12 gauge wire. Well, it sounds like a Rick project, actually, something I had done, but I guess not.
So I saw a couple interesting things in Mother Earth news. When I travel, I go to the airport, and my guilty pleasure is buying magazines. And I got the Mother Earth news, and it had a pizza oven and some talking about different organic fertilizers and a DIY wind turbine. And I was kind of, I still would like a wind turbine, maybe in my roof or something. But this fella, he literally took a 12-volt alternator out of a, you know, 1985 Buick LeSabre.
Right.
Which has a, new cars, the fan that cools the radiator is electric. And on old cars, the fan is powered by your engine. It has a belt, the fan belt, as it is called.
For good reason.
Right. So he hacked together a big radiator fan with an alternator from the same car, and he used a giant washer basically to mount the, he took the fan clutch out, which is controls the fan on the fan belt, and he put this thing up in the air, and it seems to work. The beauty of it is car alternators have, most of them have a built-in voltage regulator, so it will put out 12 volts DC instead of going up to 30 volts and down to 8 volts kind of thing.
Right.
So you can run, you know, you could downstep that to charge your phones. You could run your laptop. You know, you can run 12 volt light bulbs. You know, like all those RVs run on 12 volts and they have light bulb systems for that. Compact fluorescents and also LEDs, I'm pretty sure. And I just thought, I was enamored by it. I will link to it in the show notes here. But you can buy some pretty fancy wind turbines that are hundreds and thousands of dollars. And this guy, you know, he just made it work. And you need some what are called deep cycle batteries, which are golf cart batteries. Or you can buy the expensive solar ones. But you want batteries that are used to doing, going almost to being dead and then charged back up again. Your regular car battery is not designed for that. It's not designed for deep discharge. So car batteries will burn out quickly.
And lots of times in the, these kind of wind turbines have been around since the 70s. I'd see them a lot on cruising sailboats back in the 70s down the Caribbean when we'd visit. And, one of the things they do is they use, 6-volt, car batteries and then tie them together in series to make 12 because they're essentially golf cart batteries.
Yes.
And you can just take them down to nothing and charge them back up. They're just as rugged as they can possibly be. But, it's a good idea. We've been doing this on sailboats for a very long time, but, it would be a fun project to do. Getting the clutch to disengage or take it off has always been my problem with looking at that.
Yeah, well, you know, you just go into your shop and you have all your mechanic tools, Rick. And just
it's called a ball peen hammer in my case. If I can't hit it with a hammer, I might not be able to get it off.
So did you have on your sailboat, did you have a little wind turbine or?
I had wind turbine and had solar panels on both of them on the sailboat, had 2 solar panels and the wind turbine. So at anchor, we can make just tremendous amounts of wind. And in the Caribbean, if you're down in the stream of things, you can keep your batteries topped off with no problem at all.
Sweet. I love that. There, I was riding the subway the other day, and if anyone rides the F or the G line through Brooklyn, it actually goes, it's an elevated train, mm-hmm. and it has to go over the Gowanus Canal. And it's interesting just how high the subway goes up over the canal. But you have this drone, kind of like a drone view of the rooftops of industrial Brooklyn along the canal, which is quickly being gentrified. There's a Whole Foods there now. But the amount of commercial buildings with solar panels on them, was the number was huge there. I was really surprised at that. And a number of companies or building owners, instead of setting the panels smack on the roof, and these are flat roofs, so you have to like re-rubber them every 10 years or so, right, is they built a grid about 10 feet off the roof, and that's where the solar panels are. So if you needed to go repair the roof, you don't have to take the solar panels off. You can just, you're walking under the solar panel grid to maintain your roof. I thought that was interesting.
That's interesting. It also keeps the heat off your roof, at least partly.
Cool. Yeah, yeah.
And so, you know, you're shading your roof. That's got to help with your air conditioning load.
Are there any things, yeah, are there any solar panel people out there? Radio at gardenfork.tv. Yeah.
You know, I posted them to the Garden Fork group. One article and two podcasts. The article is Should You Pee on Your Lawn from popularmechanics.com. And the answer is maybe. you need to cut it by 2 to 1 with water because it's a little bit hot going on. But if that question ever comes up in your life, you'll know the answer now.
Well, urine is high in nitrogen.
Right.
It has phosphorus and potassium. It also has a high salt content. So you can, but you can tell that if anyone has a dog and they pee in the yard, you see that brown spot. That's the high nitrogen and the salts that are in urine that cause that to happen. But this might be more information and people want to know. I have a little bathroom talk here. But when I used to work in the community garden, we didn't have a bathroom per se. So we would use the garden shed and a watering can. And then you would dilute that with water, and then we would pour it on the compost.
Right. Well, you know, probably the compost would take the straight urine, the high nitrogen, because, you know, the more it heats up, the better it is for it.
Right. But we were also wanting to add some moisture to the thing as well. So. But right. So if you do want to add, you know, your liquid waste to the yard, it's best to cut it with some water. So that was right. Interesting. We'll link to that. Or just go to search for Popular Mechanics, Should You Pee on Your Lawn? So
that's it. And then two wonderful podcasts from the Commonwealth Club of California. And they do all kinds of things. But one of them is Chain Reaction, Why Two Wheels Are Better Than Four. And they are talking about bicycling and mostly bicycling policy, how to make cities more friendly toward it. And they mentioned in Times Square, that's the reason I thought of you, Eric, and how you don't have to, you can do test runs with a little bit of paint and some concrete blocks or traffic divides.
Right.
And then, you know, test it and see how it goes. And they had, you know, they listed off all these tests in different cities and how it went. And they're actually finding ways to make bicycling a lot easier for bicycle commuters and people that want to ride with their kids to school and that kind of thing. And it was a great policy piece. It wasn't a how to, you know, buy this kind of bicycle and this kind of saddle and that type of thing. But this is a great policy piece. And I see Virginia Beach is literally as flat as it can possibly be. The only humps are when you go over bridges, you know, that kind of thing. And so this is a great bicycling community. And I've always wished they did more to protect bicyclers on the street. But it's a growing thing. And a lot of people now are out biking for exercise and biking to commute and biking to go to school. And I think that's wonderful.
Yay. Yeah, in New York City, they Bloomberg actually appointed a head of transportation who was very proactive in creating safe bike lanes to the point where, you know, regular street, there's the cars parked along the side of the street, and then there's a bike lane painted in the asphalt, and then there's the traffic. And so the bikes are basically right next to the traffic, which happens a lot. But that now they're starting to move the parked cars into the traffic by about 4 feet. So the bike lane goes along the curb and is protected from the regular traffic by the parked cars.
Right. And also people are not going to car door you very often because Most people, frankly, drive by themselves, and there's no one getting out of the right-hand side of the car in most instances, so the doors on that side don't open as often, which is a really big thing for bicyclers.
Door. So what podcast was that on, Rick?
That was the Commonwealth Club of California.
Huh.
And they do all kinds of interesting things. In fact, there's a second one that I just am in the middle of listening to. And it's Age-Friendly Cities and the Future of Aging, which is, again, from the Commonwealth Club of California. And it's how to age in place, how to make cities age appropriate so not everyone has to go to a home or, you know, give up their house to retire, that kind of thing. And one of the most impressive statistics that came out of this in the first part of it, like I say, I haven't listened to the whole thing, but in the first 50 million years, the humans added through, heredity and whatnot, about 20 years to the average lifespan. But in the last 200 years, we've added an additional 40 years through science and through society. Science is helping, but also society is helping, being grouped together, doing things together, making life better, and mostly through channelizing and draining off malarial swamps and low places and, controlling the insect load.
Yeah, they're now trying to figure out how to get rid of mosquitoes, because I was reading that the debate is, do mosquitoes do anything good? Do they contribute, is that a source of food for a particular insect or animal? But it sounds like most animals and insects that eat mosquitoes eat a diverse group of food sources. So if you wiped out the mosquito population, it wouldn't really hurt. So that's a debate going on, should we just wipe out the mosquito altogether somehow through, genetic manipulation or something. So that was kind of interesting. But they have so many, like Zika comes up to the Americas with mosquitoes.
Well, and dengue fever, chikungunya, there are all kinds of mosquito-borne diseases. And they're actually spreading as the planet warms, and particularly in the Caribbean. That warm area is moving both north and south from the equator. And people that had been pretty safe from these things are becoming exposed to them for the first time. And also as it warms, mosquitoes are, people used to go to the top of mountains. That's the reason Jefferson built Monticello on the top of a mountain, is because the mosquito load was heavy below it. But they didn't climb up the mountain because it wasn't that warm. But now the temperature's climbing up the mountain a little bit, and so the mosquitoes are coming with it. And you see that all over the world.
Okay, two last gardening things. I realized that I made a mistake. Well, not really a mistake, but it's a preference, I guess. In my latest garlic harvest video, I set out the garlic to cure in the sunlight for a day or two.
Right.
And there's some discussion about whether that's right or wrong. And the people that I order my seed garlic from, Fillory Farm, they say that you should not do that. So it's interesting.
I have seen people just pull it out of the ground and lay it next to the row to dry it. But mostly I see people putting it up under a car shed or something and hanging it there.
I do both. I let it dry out for a day or two on the garden, just on the bare soil. And then I tie it up and I hang it in a shed that has some ventilation. I mean, I guess, all my sheds are pretty rickety, so they're well ventilated. But if you have a brand new shed, you should leave the door open.
Yeah.
But also, and it led me from that is that I was reading, Fillory Farm has a great printed catalog. You can order online, but the catalog is really nice too. And half of it is like a how-to on how to grow garlic. And I had forgotten this year that garlic in its early spring stage needs a lot of nitrogen. And I could put, a time-released organic pelletized fertilizer on there. But then the Mother Earth News had an article about the best natural organic fertilizers. And they have a chart of them. And I found that the highest nitrogen containing fertilizers are blood meal, which they say is a good source of nitrogen, but smelly. I don't know. I don't think blood meal smells to me, but, and bat guano, which is high in nitrogen, phosphorus, and trace minerals. Have you ever tried those?
I've never tried either of those. I did put Epsom salt on my tomatoes here. I treat them every 3 weeks with a little bit of a tablespoon of Epsom salt, which is magnesium, yes, in truth. And that is really helping my tomatoes. It makes them a little bit sweeter, and they are growing like crazy.
Do you add any kind of fertilizer to the tomatoes? Or?
You know, frankly, I use the pelletized time-release fertilizer.
Which is just mostly, fine, yeah.
Yeah, which mostly is because I'm, you know, I am a lazy gardener. Yeah, I don't know if people have heard that before, but Rick is a lazy gardener. But it's working like a champ right now.
The other one that's pretty high, is horse manure, which has more nitrogen in it than cow manure.
Yeah. Thomas Jefferson even commented once that asparagus needed twice the horse manure of anything else in his garden. It just ate it up. So if you got asparagus, try to find some horse manure.
Yeah, go to your local stable. They will happily give it to you.
Yeah. Fresh off the horse.
Well, it has to, you know.
You got to cool it off a little bit.
Yeah, you got to let it sit for, I would think like a year or so.
Yeah. You don't use it right away. Of course, you know, if you're doing a hotbed, horse manure on the bottom, straw on top, and then your seedlings above it with a lid on it of some sort really will generate the heat to keep your seedlings warm in the winter. And you can get an early start on spring by using quite natural products.
In the end of the article here, the Mother Earth News article, it says, feeding the soil and plants with nothing but NPK, which is nitrogen, phosphorus, and what's the K?
Nitrogen, phosphorus, and potassium.
Is like feeding your kids nothing but soda. Soil and people need a balance of nutrients. The studies have shown that 80% or more of all synthetic nitrogen applied to the soil will be volatilized. Or leached out. Well, volatilized means it's vapored off.
Mm-hmm.
And the 10 or 20% that does reach the plant will be harmful. Well, I don't know about that, but other studies show that an excess of chemical fertilizer slows or even stops the activity of microflora and microfauna, such as beneficial bacteria, algae, fungi, and other microorganisms.
And so don't overfeed your plants.
Right.
You know, the secret of good gardening is to prepare the bed ahead of time.
Yeah.
And, you know, dig in different kinds of nutrients and lots of compost, which is a great source of nitrogen most of the time. And, you know, kind of do it as naturally as you can to get all the right kind of mix of the different minerals, trace minerals, whatnot. It's actually interesting. You know, pH, this goes back to a little tribute to Garden Fork scientist Tony. The soil acidity is the key to releasing most of the micronutrients and minerals in your soil to make them available for the plant. Too high a pH and it's too base. And these things don't work. Too low a pH and it's acid. Maybe I got that backwards, which is high and low. But
acid and alkaline,
acid and alkaline. But too low, and the same thing happens. It locks up the micronutrients. Even though they're there, the plant can't use them because the pH is wrong. And as Tony likes to say, life is all about moving you know, that electron to the next level. And that's what you're doing with the pH. You have to unlock it and let the electrons move back and forth.
Huh. Wow, that was quite a deep dive there, Rick.
Well, I got that all from, like I said, Garden Fork scientist Tony. But soil science is a science. Maybe you and our Canadian friend can chat about that next time he comes up.
Well, Scott will be on next week.
He is an agronomist.
I owe him an email.
He is an agronomist. He'll know all about this. Yeah.
All right. Also, we have Will from the Weekend Homestead coming on soon to update us on his renovation, which is coming to an end now. So,
yeah, you just dropped out for about 5 seconds. So I think maybe we ought to take this opportunity to say bye bye.
Yeah. All right. See you later, everyone. Thank you very much.
Talk to you later, my friend. Bye bye.
Garden Fork's theme music is used under license from UniqueTracks.com.